to the Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Micaela, your host. Welcome to episode 57. Today I'm going to be talking about chapter 16 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Professor Trelawney's prediction. And I don't have any new Harry Potter Wizarding World news. I would have loved to have had some update on Fantastic Beasts. Unfortunately, that's not the case. So, I don't know. Just trying to stay hopeful. I would love another one or two movies, but we'll see. We haven't heard anything yet. Something that is kind of cool, just the day I'm recording this, it was 2 days ago, was the 12-year anniversary of Deathly Hallows Part 2 coming out. And it's also this time of year, like summertime, is when a lot of Harry Potter stuff was coming out, books, movies, and everything. So it's been a lot of anniversaries for that. Like this many years ago, Half-Blood Prince book came out and just things like that. So it's been pretty cool. But yeah, nothing like no new news or anything like that. So as a reminder, you guys can email me at theheiressofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook page is The Heiress of Slytherin Podcast. Twitter is @SlytherinPod, and you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. And now I can get into a little summary of last week's episode when I talked about Chapter 15. In the beginning of that chapter, Ron and Hermione finally make up, and Hermione punches Malfoy. Punches him in the movie, but in the book she like hits him, she smacks him, slaps him or whatever. And she misses a class because she's so overwhelmed and all her time turner stuff going on. So that just shows that it's taking the toll on her. And the Quidditch final is Slytherin versus Gryffindor, and the Gryffindors win. And the entire school, except for the Slytherins, are extremely happy that they won. So it was an overall pretty light chapter, I guess. I mean, compared to the rest of the book and compared to the rest of the series. So it was a fun chapter. And I have another fun chapter coming up for this episode. It's a little bit shorter, kind of. There just isn't as many like pages in the chapter, I guess you can say, but there are some good discussion points and some things to explain. So let me get into it now. The chapter starts off with pretty much just like good vibes. The school, except for the Slytherins, of course, or Harry specifically, has been having a really good like week. In the week after winning that match, the good feeling lasts about a week, and the weather is good too. However, the students still have to study a bunch for their upcoming exams because it's now June, so those exams are fast approaching. The students just want to relax and play games and drink iced pumpkin juice and things like that, but they can't because they really need to study. Even Fred and George are spotted working, like, and studying, which is a very rare sight. They have to take their OWLs, which stands for Ordinary Wizarding Levels. That's what you take in your fifth year. And Percy, who was the seventh year, is taking his NEWTs, and that stands for, it's NEWT. It stands for Nastily Exhausting Wizarding Tests. And that's like the highest qualification that Hogwarts offers. And for certain careers in the Wizarding World, you need to get certain scores and do well enough in certain subjects. So for the NEWTs. So it's really important. And everyone is starting to really take things seriously. And Percy, who wants to work in the Ministry of Magic, he needs the absolute top grade. So he's starting to get super edgy and just giving severe punishments like all the time. Anybody who disturbs the common room, who disrupts anybody studying, who's not being quiet, he just punishes them. And because he's so stressed and everything. The only person who is more anxious than Percy is Hermione. The boys have decided to just give up on asking her how she's able to attend all these classes at once, because she's not giving them answers. It's just not really clicking. But when they see her exam schedule, they can't help but not ask her. They want to know what's going on. So they look at her little exam schedule. And the first column, she has it written out by days. So on Monday at 9 o'clock, it's her arithmetic test. 9 o'clock is her transfiguration test. Then she has lunch. Then 1 o'clock, it's charms. And 1 o'clock, it's ancient runes. So she has four tests that day, four finals. And two of, they're both at the same time. Like there's one at 9 and 9 and another at 11 or at 1 and 1. So, you know, there's four at the same time, I guess you can say, like two at the same time. And Ron, who does look at her schedule, is kind of cautious with asking, but he says, like, Hermione, like, how are you sure that you've written this down correctly? And Hermione snaps at him like, what? Yeah, of course I have. And Harry is like, okay, Hermione, is there even a point in asking how you're going to sit for two exams at once? Like, should we even bother? And she says, no. And it's super funny because then she asks, have either of you seen my copy of Numerology and Grammatica? And Ron, who says this quietly, he says, oh yeah, I borrowed it for a bit of bedtime reading. Because if Hermione wasn't so on edge, he would have said that out loud, like a lot louder, but he said it quietly because he knows that he's still being Ron, but he knows he has to be a little cautious because she could just like snap at any minute. So as they continue to study, Hedwig brings a note from Hagrid, and he lets them know that the appeal is on the 6th, and that's the day after their exams are done. And it's going to be at Hogwarts, and someone from the ministry and an executioner are going to be there. So that doesn't sound good. I mean, that sounds like bad news. It sounds as though they've already decided, you know, they've already decided Buckbeak's fate and that an executioner coming is coming to kill Buckbeak. That's what it sounds like. And Ron is saying, like, they can't do that. I spent so long reading up on all this stuff for him. They can't just ignore it all. Like, of course, Ron's concerned about more than that, but it's true. Like, Hermione did a lot to help. Ron did a lot to help. And it just seems like that information that they found had to have been worth something. And now Buckbeak is seemingly going to be killed. So it's not looking so good. In addition to that, Draco Malfoy, he was pretty upset, like extremely upset about losing to Harry once again, especially in the final for the Quidditch Cup at Hogwarts. And he was pretty upset the past week, you know, but he seemed to regain a little bit more of his like bratty, arrogant personality. He kind of seemed to get it back a little bit more over the last few days. And he's starting to, like, Harry's overhearing Malfoy say these comments like, oh yeah, I'm sure that Buckbeak will be killed. Like, he's so pleased about it. It's also really hard for Harry, Ron, and Hermione to go visit Hagrid. Yeah, Harry doesn't have Quidditch practice anymore at night, but he's not supposed to be going, like, sneaking around Hogwarts at night or anything like that. And he probably would, except his cloak, his invisibility cloak, is still below the One-Eyed Witch passageway, and he has not gone to go get it because he's not even daring to go retrieve it because you never know who's going to be watching. Like, he has to be very careful, so he hasn't even gone to get that, which I would be paranoid about. Like, I would like be like, I need to go get this, but Harry's being smart here and not just being reckless and just going and grabbing it. I think for me, I would just be so stressed out and I would want to have it. An invisibility cloak, not to mention, like, not only is it a really cool, seemingly really rare artifact that works perfectly, but also it's something from his dad, his dead dad, you know? So I would, if it was me, if I was Harry, I would be so stressed out and I would be plotting all sorts of ways to go and get it. But Harry is very confident that no one else would see it or get it. The only people that know about the passageway, apparently, are Fred and George, and you know, they haven't been using it, the passageway, and if they did see the cloak down there, they would grab it for Harry. But I don't know, I would be so stressed out. I'd be like, no, I need my cloak, I need to go get it. But Harry is, he's not worried about it, he's not even gonna dare to try to go get it. So the week passes, and then it's the weekend, then it is Monday. And it is the exams. It's described as an unnatural hush in the castle. Everyone is just, the anxiety and the, you know, the anticipation for the tests and the worry, like, it's just a lot. Like, you already know how that, like, environment feels, and that's how it is. So Transfiguration is the first exam, and it's at 9 a.m., you know, and then the third years, they all leave, and they're all thinking about what they had to do and if they did it right. They had to turn a teapot into a tortoise. Hermione was irritated because she thought that her tortoise looked more like a turtle, but everyone else, that's the absolute least of their worries. Like, they don't even care about that. Some people are thinking, well, mine was like letting off steam, like steam was coming out of it. Another one had a spout for a tail, like from the teapot, so they're gonna get points off for that because they didn't transfigure it properly. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on. So they eat a quick lunch, and then they head into their charms test. And Hermione, she was correct, because last chapter, they practiced cheering charms, and Hermione missed that lesson. And then she was saying that Professor Flitwick hinted that cheering charms would be on the test, so she was a little bit upset about that. Although I do think that she could have gone back in time with her time turner to attend that lesson and everything. Or even Flitwick, I'm sure, would have given her like a few extra minutes because he knows she's using the time turner. Like, I'm sure there's solutions, and Hermione probably did the best out of all of them. But cheering charms was on the test, like she said. Harry and Ron were partners, and they ended up having, or Harry actually, he did his cheering charm, like, I guess a little bit too well. He overdid it, and Ron was just having just these fits of hysterical laughter, and he had to leave for a bit before it wore off so he could do the charm himself onto Harry. And then they had dinner, you know, after the charms test, and they had to go back to study because in the morning they were going to have Care of Magical Creatures. So it wasn't a great test for Care of Magical Creatures because Hagrid, they could just tell that his heart was not in it. They had to keep a flobberworm alive to pass the test. Basically, flobberworms flourish if they're left alone. So, and it's 1 hour, so they just had to be alive at the end of 1 hour. But they could tell Hagrid's heart was not in it. And of course it wouldn't be, like, his pet is about to be killed. You know, he's not, of course his heart isn't going to be in it, but he still has to go to work and do his job and everything. Hagrid is also telling them that Buckbeak is starting to get depressed, like he can tell, because he's been cooped up too long, and he's kind of trying to be hopeful, like, we'll know the day after tomorrow, you know, what's going to happen, but still, Hagrid is just not feeling great, his heart's not in it, and Buckbeak is probably affecting Buckbeak too, not only being cooped up and not able to fly, but also Hagrid is in like a sad mood, so that's going to affect Buckbeak as well when they're in the same hut. After the Care of Magical Creatures test, they go to lunch, enjoy their lunch, not really, because their next test is potions with their least favorite teacher, Professor Snape, and they have to make confusing concoctions. And part of the concoction, like that potion, you have to thicken it enough. And Harry's, he couldn't get it to thicken. And Snape, when he's like, you know, he's writing notes as he's walking past all the students' potions. And it looks like he writes a zero on his notes when he passes by Harry. So, of course, that's not looking very good for Harry for potions class. So remember, they had Transfiguration and Charms on Monday. On Tuesday, they had Care of Magical Creatures and Potions. And then that same Tuesday night / Wednesday morning at midnight, they had an astronomy test. So that's at midnight up in the highest tower. And then the following morning, they have History of Magic. So that's just bad scheduling. I mean, they're 13 and they have to do... It's already kind of a lot to have like all those tests in a row. But to have one test, like two tests on Monday, two tests on a Tuesday, and then that Tuesday night you have astronomy, and then a few hours later, like at 9 o'clock, you have History of Magic. That just sounds awful to me. Like that, I just don't think that's good scheduling at all. That's a horrible schedule. But History of Magic, and Harry writes down everything he can remember that Florian Fortescue ever told him about the medieval witch hunts, Florian Fortescue is the one that owns the ice cream parlor in Diagon Alley that Harry was going to every day when he was staying there in Diagon Alley after he ran away from the Dursleys. And he was giving him, like, the free ice creams and everything. So everything that Florian ever told Harry, Harry tries to remember it so he could just scribble it onto his History of Magic final. And then, again, like, astronomy at midnight, History of Magic in the morning. Then in that afternoon, they have herbology. It's in the greenhouses. And then they, you know, take the rest of the day to rest and study for their next test. So now it's Thursday. This is their second to last test. And it's Defense Against the Dark Arts. However, it's a pretty cool test. Like, they all pretty much enjoy it. It's unusual. It's the most unusual test that any of them have ever taken. But it's an obstacle course, and it's outside, and they have to wade across a deep paddling pool, and it contains a Grindelow. That was the creature that Harry saw in Lupin's office when he was in there for the first time. Then they have to cross a series of potholes full of redcaps, another magical creature. Then they have to go through a marsh, like, you know, the muddy area and stuff. And they have to ignore directions of a Hinky Punk who's trying to mislead them. And then they have to climb into an old trunk and battle with a new Boggart. And Harry does really well. He climbs out of the trunk and does well with the Boggart. And Lupin gives him full marks. And Harry he's excited. He's feeling pretty good. And then he decides to just hang around and watch Ron and Hermione. Ron also does pretty well, except when he reaches the Hinky Punk, it does confuse him. It confuses Ron and misleads him. And he ends up sinking, like, waist high. And then Hermione, she does everything pretty perfectly until she gets into the trunk with the Boggart. And she was in there for about a minute, and then she comes out screaming. And everyone is startled. Lupin was like, what happened? What's the matter? And Hermione, she's, like, shaking and stuttering, pointing to the trunk. And she says, Professor McGonagall, she said I'd failed everything. So just take a second to think about this. That is Hermione's Boggart. Remember, a Boggart takes the form of whatever you fear at, like, most in the world. Whatever is the scariest thing in the world to you, that is what you will see. That is what your Boggart will turn into. And that's literally what Hermione's was. It was Professor McGonagall telling her you'd failed everything. Like, I absolutely agree. I think that is one of the most terrifying things that could happen. But there are so many scary things in the world that I don't think that is what would scare me the most. I mean, Hermione's a Gryffindor. We know that she's extremely intelligent. We know that, of course. But she's also super brave. And I think that is a real mark of her true Gryffindorism, I guess you can say, is the fact that her Boggart, the thing that scares her the most in the world, is failing her tests. I get it. That's terrifying. But think about other Boggarts, like Ron's is spiders. You know, that I think spiders are scary, but I don't know if they're the most scary thing in the world to me, you know? So, of course, these Boggarts are subjective. They're not always going to be what you think they might be. But that is what Hermione experiences with it. And like Harry's, right? It was the Dementor because he fears fear the most out of everything. I mean, just think about it. Another example would be Mrs. Weasley. Her Boggart is revealed in the fifth book, and it's all her children dead, including Harry. Mr. Weasley, like, seeing her family and Harry, who she includes with that, she just sees their dead bodies of all her children. I think that's pretty scary, too. You know, I think that that's a pretty fair statement to say that most people in this world, their Boggarts would be dead family members, right? So just think about how scared Hermione is of failing, and that the fact that that's her Boggart, like, it's just, it takes a lot to kind of wrap my mind around it, just because it really is a lot, you know? She's terrified, but she's so brave that everything in this world that scares her, it's failing. Of course, your fears can change after life-altering events, but that's Hermione's. And also, think about it, Harry, he got full marks, he did really great on it. Hermione did everything perfectly until the Boggart, and Ron was doing he was doing pretty good until the hinky punk, you know? So Harry's best subject is definitely Defense Against the Dark Arts, and he even scores better than Hermione. That's in the practical sense. Like, on a written test, I mean, Harry would do really well, but Hermione would most likely do better just because it's Hermione. You know, she studies more. But real life application, Hermione still does very well with spells and everything. But think about the Patronus Charm. That's a huge defensive spell, Defense Against Dark Arts. And that is like the one spell Hermione has some trouble with. But that is like probably the one spell, like from the end of this book on through the rest of his life, that Harry is just perfect at. It is, well, Expelliarmus is another signature spell of Harry's, of course, but this really difficult Patronus Charm, Harry just gets so good at it, and Hermione has some trouble, you know? So it's like, they all have their strengths. Yes, Hermione's pretty much good at everything, but she's not the best at everything when it comes to magic, even though she is very good. So that's just something to think about. And back to like Hermione's test. So, you know, she comes out saying, that was Professor McGonagall. She told me I'd failed everything. She comes out screaming. So presumably she wasn't able to do the ridiculous spell and turn it into something comical. That fear stayed with her. So it takes a while to calm Hermione down. Harry, Ron, and Lupin have to kind of wait till she kind of gets a grip on herself and calms down and everything. And I kind of get that, you know? Like, if you see the thing that scares you most, you're going to have a pretty harrowing next few hours, most likely, you know? Unless you're Harry right now and he just did great, like, he's fine. But Hermione, she's going to feel that and it's going to stay with her for a little bit. So as they're walking back towards the castle, Ron is feeling like he wants to laugh at Hermione's bog art. However, something catches their attention. So as they're like walking up to the castle, they see Cornelius Fudge. Remember, he's the Minister of Magic. And Harry and Ron saw him for the first time. Well, I mean, I think Ron has seen him just a few times, like whether he went to the ministry with his dad for work one day or something, or just Wizarding World Daily Prophet. You know, he's grown up in the Wizarding World, so he knows what some famous people look like, you know? And also because Harry and Ron, they were underneath Harry's invisibility cloak in the Chamber of Secrets in the second book when Hagrid got arrested. And then Ron pointed him out, that's the Minister of Magic, that's Cornelius Fudge. And then Harry actually met him for the first time earlier in this book in the summertime when he ran away from the Dursleys' house. And he was at the Leaky Cauldron. Cornelius Fudge was there waiting for him. But anyways, back to the chapter. They're walking up back to the castle and Cornelius Fudge is there. He's at the top of the steps. And then he walks towards Harry and the trio. And he's like, oh, you, Harry. He really only addresses Harry. So, because Ron and Hermione, they're not on speaking terms with the Minister of Magic. He doesn't really care about them. So he says, Harry, like, I'm sure you've just finished the test. And Harry's like, yeah, we have. And then he tells Harry, like, it's a pity, you know, I'm here on an unpleasant mission. And he says that the committee required a witness for the execution. And he needed to check on the Sirius Black situation anyways. You know, he was asked to step in. And he needed to visit Hogwarts anyways. So he's just killing multiple birds with one stone. He's doing all of this stuff. So Ron says, does that mean the appeal's already happened? And Fudge kind of gives him like a curious look and says, no, it's scheduled for this afternoon. And then so Ron is like, well, then that means you might not have to witness an execution after all, because that's what Fudge said. Like, oh, I have to witness an execution. But Ron's like, the appeal didn't happen yet, so maybe you won't have to witness an execution. And Fudge, he doesn't even have time to answer because two more wizards come out of the castle doors. One of them looks so old that it looks like he's kind of like withering away in front of them. And the other one is tall, he's thin, he has a black mustache. And Harry figures like, oh, okay, they're the representatives for the committee of the disposal of magical creatures that Hagrid was talking about. And, you know, the old one says, oh, I'm getting too old for this. And then he says, 2 o'clock, isn't it, Fudge? and the one with the black mustache is like touching something on his belt. And Harry looks and it's an axe, like he's touching the blade of his axe. So Ron saying, you might not have to witness an execution because it hasn't happened yet, the appeal hasn't happened yet, but Fudge is just kind of doesn't really say anything, you know. He doesn't answer, the two wizards come, that kind of interrupts him. But also, he already pretty much has it in his mind that the execution is going to happen. So, you know, he's not really changing his mind on that. That's just how he thinks it's going to be. And the two wizards, the old one and the one with the black mustache, Dumb and Fudge, like, walk off towards Hagrid's cabin. And before they walk off, or like as they're walking off, Ron is about to say something, but Hermione nudges him in the ribs and they go into the castle. And as they're in the Great Hall eating lunch, Ron asks Hermione, like, why did you stop me when I was about to say something? Did you see them? They already have the axe ready to go. It's sharpened. Like, they're ready to kill him. This is injustice. That's so Ron's pretty annoyed. He's really mad. And Hermione tells him, like, Ron, your dad works for the ministry. You can't go saying things like that to his boss, to the Minister of Magic. You can't just go saying things like that and speaking your mind like that. You don't want to get your dad in trouble or anything, or make it seem like you know too much. And she also adds that as long as Hagrid keeps his head this time, like he doesn't fall apart like he did in the first trial, and he like argues the case properly, then they can't possibly execute Buckbeak. However, Harry can tell that Hermione doesn't really believe what she's saying. Ron can tell as well. The trio just doesn't have high hopes, but, you know, they're kind of trying to keep the faith and everything stay positive, even though all three of them are really not feeling positive at all. And everyone around them in the Great Hall, it's like a very excited energy. It's full of like buzzing anticipation because the last bit of the exams are the afternoon. Like everyone's last test is this afternoon. So everyone's really excited. But Harry, Ron, and Hermione, they're so worried and stressed out and nervous for Hagrid and Buckbeak that they can't even join in on that excitement. So everyone around them is happy, but they're not. Harry and Ron's last test is divination, and Hermione's is muggle studies. Remember, Hermione quit divination a few weeks ago. So they kind of go their separate ways to take their tests. And when they get there, everyone is outside of the classroom doing some last minute studying, and Neville informs them, like, she's seeing all of us separately. Like, we're not doing like a test at once. Everyone is going in there at one time. And he has his textbook open, the Unfogging the Future textbook. It's open to the pages where it talks about crystal gazing. And he asks, like, have either of you ever seen anything in a crystal ball? Because none of them have. So he's very worried about his test. But Harry and Ron, they're worried too, but they're also still really distracted just thinking about Hagrid. And Harry, they keep checking the time because they know at 2 o'clock is when the appeal starts. And it's like 1 o'clock or a little bit after one at this point. So they're just very, very nervous. So everyone that comes out of the classroom refuses to say what was going on in there. Like, as each person comes out, they ask, like, what did she say? Was it okay? What happened? What did you have to do? Like, and no one says anything. They all refuse to say. Except Neville, when he goes and comes back out, he says that the crystal ball has told Professor Trelawney that if I tell you, I'll have a horrible accident. And Neville has too many accidents, so he's like, you know what? I'm not even gonna risk it. That's what Neville's thinking. And Harry and Ron are just like, whatever. Ron is like, you know what? That's convenient. I'm starting to think Hermione was right about her. She's an old fraud. So, you know, Harry's kind of thinking so as well. And looking at the time, it's now 2 o'clock. So they really want her to hurry up. They want to go see what's going on. And even, you know, more people come out, Pravarti and Lavender, they're the ones that really like Professor Trelawney. Pravarti gets told that she has the makings of a true seer and that she saw loads of stuff in the crystal ball. And Lavender, too, like, apparently she did really well. Those are Professor Trelawney's favorite students, Pivardi and Lavender. So, of course, she's going to tell them that they're doing well. They're the only ones that, like, praise her and really like what she sees, and they really admire her. So, of course, she's going to give them good grades. The next person that Professor Trelawney calls is Ron. Of course, his full name, Ronald Weasley. So he goes in there for about 20 minutes. Like, these are lasting, or at least Ron's has lasted a long time. And Harry asks, like, how'd it go? And Ron said that it was rubbish. He couldn't see anything at all in the crystal ball. So he just, like, made some stuff up, but he doesn't think that Professor Trelawney was convinced. Harry is the next name that she calls. So he goes up into the tower, and it's hotter than ever before. The curtains are closed, but it's the fire is, like, there's a fire in the fireplace. Like, it's just really stuffy in there. And it's summertime. Granted, this is the UK. I don't really know how hot it can get in the summer. I mean, I'll look it up really quick. But I mean, like, I'm from Arizona, and it's hot there all the time. So sometimes it's like in the UK, I remember, like, I read something and it was like 90 in the UK during the summer. And that was like so hot. And I get if you're not used to it, it's going to be. But for me, I was like, wow, I wish that was like hot. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, if you're not used to it, it's going to feel hot. So just a quick Google search says that the average right now in the United Kingdom, the low is 58 there right now at 2 a.m. It's 2 a.m. there right now, but it's 7:45 p.m. where I live. But they're saying that it's 74, that's like the high, the low and high. So on average, apparently 48 to 64 degrees. The warmest month is July. So I mean, that's cold to me a little bit. That can be cold to me. So, you know, it's all subjective. Weather isn't gonna feel the same for everybody, you know, but still, I get Harry's, like, it's hot for him there. It's hot in the summertime for him, and also with the fire going on. And he's nervous, you know, about Hagrid and Buckbeak. It's just a lot going on. So Professor Trelawney tells him to, like, take a seat, take your time, look inside the crystal ball, tell me what you see. So Harry just stares, like, as hard as he can. And he really tries to, like, will his mind to, like, see something, but nothing happens. He doesn't see anything, and the heat is, like, overpowering. It's overwhelming him. There's, like, smoke flying through the air, and he thinks about what Ron just said, how Ron just made stuff up. So Harry's like, okay, I see a dark shape. And then he's like, okay, it's a hippogriff. And Professor Trelawney's like, oh, indeed. And she's, like, taking notes on her parchment. And she's saying that you may well be seeing the outcome of poor Hagrid's trouble with the Ministry of Magic. And then she says, look closer. Does the hippogriff appear to have its head? You know, she's not speaking some good things into existence here, right? So Harry says, yes, like, firmly, like, yeah, he has its head. And Professor Trelawney's like, are you sure? Are you sure you don't see an axe, like a shadowy figure holding an axe and slicing its head off? So Harry says no, and he starts to feel a little bit nauseous, a little bit sick. And Professor Trelawney keeps asking, like, okay, any blood, any weeping Hagrid? And Harry just wants to leave this room, like, more than anything, and says, no, it's fine, it's flying away. And then Professor Trelawney just sighs and is like, okay, fine, we'll just leave it there. I'm disappointed, but I'm sure you did your best. So this is a little interesting here. Professor Trelawney is like, okay, you sure you don't see someone chopping its head off? And that is exactly what happens in this chapter. Buckbeak gets his head cut off. But then later in this book, in a few chapters, Harry, Ron, and Hermione, well, actually just Harry and Hermione, they use the time turner to go back in time and to save Buckbeak. And that is what Harry sees. Harry, well, he pretends to see Buckbeak flying away. So I really like how Professor Trelawney sees what happens, or she says, like, I think you're seeing what's going to happen, which does happen. Buckbeak does get killed, But Harry and Hermione save him. So Harry is pretending to see that, you know, so there's, you know, there's just like parallels going on. But that is Harry's test. That's his divination test. And now he is done with exams. So Harry grabs his bag. He's about to leave the room, but then he hears a loud, harsh voice behind him. And this is why the chapter is called Professor Trelawney's Prediction, because she gives a prediction here. And I'm going to read what the prediction is, because it's just better if I like read that paragraph rather than like paraphrase it. But I do want to mention before I read her prediction here that this isn't the first time she has made one. I've mentioned this a few times before, especially for this book, but just so you guys can remember, Professor Trelawney is the one who made the prophecy about Harry and Voldemort in the first place. Dumbledore, you know, a few years ago, at this point it was like 13, 14 years ago, when he was hiring someone for a divination post, he had a job interview, or rather, Professor Trelawney had a job interview with him for the teaching post at Hogwarts for divination. Dumbledore was thinking of getting rid of this, of divination at Hogwarts, because he was like, this is a really faulty branch of magic. It's not very reliable. Like, I don't think I'm, you know, gonna do it. And actually, Professor Trelawney's interview didn't go, like, great. Like, he actually was like, yeah, you know what? I don't think this is gonna work out, but thanks so much for being here, you know, whatever. Like, he wasn't gonna hire her. And then suddenly she went into a trance and she started to recite the prophecy about Harry and Voldemort, that, you know, the Dark Lord being Voldemort and a boy born at the end of July to parents who have defied the Dark Lord thrice. So parents who have defied him three times. And it could have been Neville. However, Voldemort decided that it was Harry. He thought that it meant Harry. So he went after that whole thing, Lily and James, and then Peter Pettigrew, aka Scabbers, is the one who told Voldemort what they were hiding because he was a secret keeper. Like that whole thing that I've explained in this podcast many episodes ago, right? So that is the prophecy that Professor Trelawney made. And she doesn't even know till this day. She has no idea that she even made that prophecy, because when she goes into her trance, she doesn't remember when she comes out of it. So Dumbledore, hearing that prophecy of hers, was like, okay, I'm going to hire her. Like, and now I have this information about this prophecy. However, the other person that heard this prophecy was Snape. He was like being nosy and eavesdropping. So Snape, who was still very much loyal to Voldemort at that period of time, went and told Voldemort about the prophecy. And that's how Voldemort knows about the prophecy, because of Snape, you know? So it gets a little messy there. Like, yeah, Snape, you're a big part of the reason why the love of your life is dead, you know? So it's, you know, there's a lot going on there. It gets messy and everything, but that's kind of the gist of it. Professor Trelawney did make a prediction all those years ago. That prophecy was the prophecy about Harry and Voldemort, like the whole reason that Voldemort has wanted to kill Harry for over a decade, right? That's the whole reason, is because of this prophecy. So now I'm going to get into what she's saying now. So Harry, hearing that loud, harsh voice behind him say, it will happen tonight. And that didn't sound at all like Professor Trelawney's normally like misty, mystical voice. It was a loud, harsh voice. And she had gone rigid in her armchair. Her eyes were all out of focus. Harry's like, sorry, like, what was that? And her eyes are rolling. She doesn't seem to hear him at all. And Harry starts to kind of go into a panic. He's confused. He doesn't know what to do. She looks like she's about to go into some sort of seizure. So he just hesitates, looks at her, and he's thinking like, okay, he's about to go run to the hospital wing to go grab Madame Pomfrey, to grab somebody, because he's like, what do I do? And he's about to run, but then he hears Professor Trelawney speak in that loud, harsh voice again that isn't her voice. And she says, the Dark Lord lies alone and friendless, abandoned by his followers. His servant has been chained these 12 years. Tonight, before midnight, the servant will break free and set out to rejoin his master. The Dark Lord will rise again with his servant's aid, greater and more terrible than ever before. Tonight, before midnight, the servant will set out to rejoin his master. And then her head, like, kind of falls forward. She makes, like, a grunting noise, and her head snaps back up, and she's like, oh, so sorry, dear boy. The heat of the day, I drifted off there for a moment. And Harry just stands staring at her. He's freaked out, rightfully so. I would be absolutely terrified, too. I would be just out of my mind terrified if I had witnessed that and heard, not only witnessed, like, her trance-like state, but the words she said. Yeah, I'd be very scared. So Harry just stares at her, like he doesn't even know what to do. And she's like, what, like, is everything all right? Like, what's going on? And he says, you just told me that the Dark Lord's going to rise again and his servant is going to come back to him. And Professor Trelawney just looks at him completely startled and confused. She's like, the Dark Lord, as in he who must not be named, that's not something to joke about. And she's like, and Harry's like, you just said it. I literally just heard you say it. So did the Dark Lord. And so she cuts him off and says, I think he must have dozed off too. I was certainly not presumed to predict anything quite as far-fetched as that. But you have, actually, but she just doesn't know it. Like, Dumbledore did not tell her that he made that prophecy all those years ago about Harry and Voldemort. Dumbledore did not tell her. So her saying right here, I was certainly not presumed to predict anything quite as far-fetched as that. Well, you already have. You just don't know. And now you've done it twice. So Harry climbs back out of the ladder and he leaves. And he's wondering, did I just actually hear her make a real prediction? Like, he's like, that was crazy. So I'm going to explain a little bit about her prediction and why it seems like all the clues point to Sirius. But remember, as I've said so many times, like explaining that they have the wrong man. Sirius is not the one, Sirius Black, you know, he's not the one who was a Death Eater. He's not the one who sold out Lily and James to Voldemort. This is all Peter Pettigrew. It's all Peter Pettigrew, who was like the secret spy and everything. So of course, like, they're going to think it's Sirius, but it's not. So the first line, the Dark Lord lies alone and friendless, abandoned by his followers. That's pretty self-explanatory, you know. His servant has been chained these 12 years. So that's Sirius Black has been in prison in Azkaban for 12 years. So they're going to think that. However, that is referring to Peter Pettigrew. I wouldn't say he's necessarily been chained, but he faked his death. And he's been living as Scabbers the Rat, you know, hiding with the Weasley family. So that's like the chains, the entrapment he's been in his animagus form as a rat. And tonight before midnight, the servant will break free and set out to rejoin his master. That does happen. He does break free, as we'll see in the next few chapters, and sets out to go find Voldemort because that is where he can have some sort of like power. That's what he's looking for. The next line is, the Dark Lord will rise again with his servant's aid, greater and more terrible than ever before. That does happen. It takes a year, but in a year from now in these books, that is going to happen. Peter Pettigrew very much helps Voldemort regain his power, and he's greater and more terrible than before. That for sure happens. And then, yeah, and then she just repeats, like, tonight before midnight, the servant will set out to rejoin his master. Because that is what happens. So this prediction is accurate. However, hearing all these things, of course, Harry is going to think that it's about Sirius. But it's not. It is completely Peter Pettigrew. So Harry, he goes back up to the Gryffindor Tower. It takes a while because he has to get past, like, the security trolls. And those words that Professor Trelawney spoke, they're still in his head. He's still very much, like, affected by that. Like, it was creepy, and it's just staying in his head. And in the common room, everyone is happy. They're all laughing and joking around. They're having a good time because their tests are done. Their exams are done. They're free for like the next few days. Ron and Hermione, however, are pretty upset. Like, Harry starts to say, Professor Trelawney, she just told me, but taking a good look at their faces, he just stops and he sees just their faces. They look just awful. And Ron says, Buckbeak lost. Hagrid just sent this. And he sends Hagrid's note. And it says, lost appeal. They're going to execute at sunset. Nothing you can do. Don't come down. I don't want you to see it. Like, they don't want to see Buck be killed. And also, like, if you think about it, they really could have just transported him somewhere else to be killed. They didn't have to do it at Hogwarts, you know? But I guess the fact that it's at Hogwarts, like, maybe that's a little bit more comfort to Hagrid and to Buckbeak, because, you know, he's not dying in an unfamiliar place. The last thing he sees isn't going to be some random place, some random people he doesn't know. Maybe the last thing he's looking at is Hagrid and, like, the sky. You know what I mean? It's a little bit more comforting, but also, like, it's an interesting choice to have the execution be carried out and, like, the killing be at Hogwarts. But Harry is like, we have to go. Hagrid can't just sit there on his own with Buckbeak waiting for him to be executed. And Ron is like, yeah, but it's at sunset. We'd never be allowed, especially you, Harry, remember? Sirius Black is out there and he's apparently after you. Like, remember that detail? You can't just go out there. So Harry is like, yeah, but I don't have the cloak, remember? And so Hermione asks where it is, and Harry tells her about the passageway. So she goes and gets the cloak so that Harry won't be in trouble. And she asks him, like, yeah, how do you open that one-eyed witch passageway again? He tells her. And so, like, Hermione doesn't even wait for Harry to finish the sentence. Like, he's like, but you'll never. She just leaves. She just gets up and leaves, and she goes to get the cloak. And Ron is like, you know what, Hermione? I don't even know what's gotten into you lately, because first you hit Malfoy, and then you walk out of Professor Trelawney's classroom, and then you go and get this cloak back so that Harry won't get in trouble. And Hermione looks flattered. She's like, yeah, like, I don't know. I'm just breaking rules, you know? So I really like that Hermione got it, because she didn't know about the cloak being hidden. Like, remember, they weren't really talking to Hermione about what was happening, you know, for a few weeks. So that's why she didn't know where the cloak was. So once Harry told her, she was like, okay, say less. I'm gonna go get it. So they go down to dinner, you know, the same time as everybody else, but they don't go back up to the Gryffindor Tower. They have the cloak and they sneak out. And it's kind of an empty entrance hall, and they go out, cloak on, nobody seeing them, and they just carefully walk across the grounds, heading towards Hagrid's cabin. They get there and they knock, and he's like looking around because they're underneath the cloak. And Harry's like, it's us, we're wearing the cloak, like, let us in so we can take it off. And Hagrid's like, you guys shouldn't have come, but he's also glad that they're there to comfort him. He's not crying. He's not like doing anything. He's just sitting there. He's very hopeless. He's helpless. And the trio feels that Hagrid's helplessness is worse than his sobbing. Like, it's just really rough to see. Just no hope. He not trying, like, nothing. It's really hard to see him that way. It's worse than seeing him sob. So Hermione's like, okay, well, like, where's Buckbeak, Hagrid? Like, he's not in here. So Hagrid's like, I just put him outside in the pumpkin patch. I tethered him there so he could see the trees and smell the fresh air before, you know, what's going on. So he's trying to pour tea and he can't because he's just shaking. He's just so many emotions right now. That would just be a terrible feeling to be going through, like, what Hagrid's going through right now. So the trio it's dangerous that they did go, but to go to Hagrid's hut, but it's also good that he's not alone right now. So Hermione goes to get some, like, tea sets, like the mugs and all that stuff from the cupboard. And Harry's asking, like, is there anything that anyone can do, Hagrid? Like, Dumbledore, I'm sure he can do something. And Hagrid says that Dumbledore tried, but the committee just will not listen to them. Like, Dumbledore was advocating for Buckbeak, saying that he's all right, like, nothing to be scared of or anything like that. But Lucius Malfoy threatened them, and he's saying that the executioner is named McNair, that's his last name, and that he's an old pal of Lucius. And he is, in fact, an old pal of Lucius. They are both Death Eaters. So it's very fitting that a Death Eater, you know, after the whole first fall of Voldemort, that he would have a job as an executioner, you know? So some Death Eaters really like killing. And, you know, this guy was like, well, hey, this is my job now. I can of course, you can't just kill anybody, but or anything. But this is McNair's job. He's an executioner. So, you know, he is an old pal of Lucius's, and I'm sure that, of course, that's not good for Hagrid, but it's also another example of Lucius's influence. So, not good. But Dumbledore is going to come down soon, so Hagrid's like, he's going to be here soon. He said that he wanted to be with me, like, while it happened. And Hagrid's like, that's really nice of him. He's a great man, Dumbledore. He's going to be here to comfort me and support me. So Hermione, who's been looking around the cupboard for a like milk jug and teacups and stuff, says, we'll stay with you too, Hagrid. Like, don't worry. And Hagrid's like, no, you guys are going to go back up to the castle. I don't want Dumbledore to catch you here without permission, especially you, Harry. You'll be in big trouble. And Hermione is starting to cry because she's just so upset. She feels so terrible. But she picks up like all the supplies to make the tea and everything, the milk bottle to pour into the jug. And then she lets out a shriek. And she's like, Ron, I don't believe it. It's Scabbers. And Ron just stares at her and is like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And she carries the milk jug over to the table and turns it upside down. And Scabbers comes sliding out and tries to get back into the milk jug to hide. And Ron is like, what? Scabbers, Scabbers, what are you doing here? Remember, they thought that Scabbers was dead for a while now. It's been weeks, like months, they thought Scabbers was dead. So this is a shock to see him. And he looks worse than ever. He looks absolutely awful. He looks bad before, but he's thinner than ever. Remember the stress, because he knows that Sirius Black is coming after him. So he has huge, like, tufts of hair that are gone. He's thinner than ever, and he's trying to free himself. Like, Ron's holding him. He's, like, trying to, like, wriggle out. He does not want to be around them. And Ron is like, it's okay, Scabbers. Like, there's no cats. Like, nothing's going to hurt you. And, yeah. You don't gotta worry about the cat. You should. Crookshanks definitely wants to hurt him, but also Sirius Black, like the dog. That's what you need to be watching out for. But suddenly Hagrid, he like stands up because he's looking out the window and he sees they're all coming towards him. The committee, so that old guy, McNair, the executioner, Fudge, the minister, and Dumbledore, they're all coming down towards the cloak. So Harry, Ron, Hermione like turn around and Hagrid's like, you gotta go, like, they can't find you here, go now, put the cloak back on. And so Ron, and also Hagrid is, like, shaking, he's terrified, like, he knows that the end is near for Buckbeak, because they're all walking down towards him right now, so he's very much scared, but he's like, okay, you guys gotta go. So Ron stuffs Scabbers into his pocket, and we haven't seen Scabbers in a while, and it's because he's been hiding from Sirius Black, because he doesn't want to get caught. But, like, seeing Scabbers right now, like, oh my gosh, this book is so good. And there's only a few chapters left, and I'm so excited to talk about the rest of them. But basically, seeing Scabbers here right now, like, that is setting so many things in motion. Like, imagine if they hadn't seen Scabbers right now, but all the other events unfolded. Of course, they would have unfolded differently, because Scabbers wasn't there, aka Peter Pettigrew. And secrets and stuff wouldn't have been revealed. But still, like, it's some pretty cool stuff coming up. Anyways, so Hagrid's like, put the cloak on. I'll let you guys out through the back way. Like, into his garden through the back door. So Harry, you know, they're underneath the cloak. And Harry himself, he feels really strange. Like, he feels strangely unreal is how it's described. Especially, like, because they're going out the back door and they see Buckbeak just a few yards away. He's tethered to a tree, like, in the pumpkin patch. And, you know, animals are smart. They have instincts. And, like, you can tell that Buckbeak is on edge. He looks uneasy. He knows that something's happening. Something's about to happen. But he isn't really sure what. Like, he's just not, you can tell he's like pawing the ground nervously. Like, you know, when animals, they're smart. They know what something's going on. So that's how Buckbeak feels right now. And that's terrible to even think about, to witness. Like, that would just be awful. So Hagrid goes outside and he's like, it's okay, Beaky. Like, it's okay. And I feel so bad, because imagine seeing like this happen to your pet. That would just be like the worst feeling. So you know, the trio, they're like, Hagrid, like, they're out there underneath the cloak and everything. He's like, Hagrid, we can't just let this happen. Like, they can't kill him. We'll tell them what really happened. Like, let us talk to them. And Hagrid's like, no, go. Like, you guys gotta go. Like, it's bad enough. You guys are here. I don't want to get you guys in trouble. Like, no, just go. And they have no choice. So, you know, they walk and they leave. And he's like, go quickly. Go. Like, don't listen. Don't watch. He doesn't want the trio to watch Buckbeak get killed. And so Harry, Ron, Hermione, it's described as in, like, they're moving in, like, a slow, horrified trance. And they're trying to, like, go as fast as they can underneath the cloak so they don't get caught, and trying to get away from the hut. Hermione's like, we have to hurry. Like, I can't stand it. I can't bear to, like, hear or anything. But it's kind of hard to move because Ron keeps stopping, and he's like, Scabbers, it's Scabbers. Like, he won't stay put. He keeps trying to get out of my pocket. And so Ron, he's like twisting and flailing, like Scabbers is going crazy. He's going berserk right now. He is squeaking. He keeps trying to bite Ron. He's trying to, like, get out of his grasp because he knows that, like, Scabbers, like Peter Pettigrew, he thinks that he's safer, like, escaping off somewhere rather than being seen with Ron. You know what I mean? Like, he's terrified for his life right now. So he keeps moving and squeaking and squealing and twisting and everything. And Ron is like, Scabbers, it's me, you idiot. Like, it's Ron. Like, you know me. Like, stop. And so they keep trying to move, but Scabbers, it won't stay put. So Ron is stopping. And Hermione's like, Ron, like, let's go. Like, please, we have to move. They're going to do it. He's like, okay. And so he keeps stopping because Scabbers, like, won't stop. Like, I know it's like I keep repeating it, but that's how it's emphasized. Like, he just will not stop flailing and everything. And he's, like, loud, squeaking and squealing loudly for a rat. So Ron's like, shut up, Scabbers. Like, they're going to hear us. He just is squealing just so wildly. But it's not enough to cover up the voices that are coming from Hagrid's garden, the pumpkin patch, where all those people are. All those people being McNair, the old wizard, Dumbledore, Fudge, Hagrid, and then Buckbeak. But there's, like, a jumble of voices. It's, like, dead quiet, then no warning. You just hear the swish and thud of an axe. Like, they really didn't even give Hagrid, like, some time, you know? Like, he didn't even really get a good chance to say goodbye or anything. So there's so many things wrong with how they did this. But they hear that thud of an axe, and Hermione just turned around on the spot, and she whispers to Harry, they did it. I don't believe that, like, they really just did it. So that's where the chapter ends. It's pretty devastating. I mean, because on this podcast, I do talk about the stuff that happens throughout the series and everything, so I know it's going to be okay. Like, I know that they're going to save Buckbeak when Harry and Hermione go back in time with the time turner. They save Buckbeak, and he survives. But right now, they don't know that. Right now, he's dead, and the emotions and the hurt and the heartbreak is very real for Hagrid, very real for Harry, Ron, Hermione. They feel terrible, so I just feel so bad. Like, oh my gosh. It's so sad. Like, imagine if it's, like, your pet and this was happening. Like, your pet did nothing wrong, but Malfoy comes and ruins everything, you know? So it's just a really sad ending, and they just found Scabbers. You would think that it'd be happy for Ron to be reunited with his pet. But that's not the case because he's squealing madly and trying to bite Ron and trying to escape and everything. And they have no idea why. They're about to find out, but they don't know why in that moment. And I will, of course, like I always do at the end of these books end of the books. So when I talk about the movie and book comparison and everything, I'll talk about it more, but again, like in the movie, this is another instance at this part in the movie where it was like an opportunity for them to have like Ron and Hermione fight, and they don't in the book here. So just something to keep in mind that I'll talk about in however many episodes, like when I get to the book to movie comparison episode, because this was chapter 16 and there are 22 chapters. So almost done with the book. It's very likely that I'll have to split some into two parts. I do have for I believe it's either next episode or the episode after that for either chapter 17 or 18, where actually I think it is chapter 17. Anyways, where I have a guest host. So that's pretty cool too. We have a good discussion about things that happen in that book and everything, or in that chapter. But this one was, it was pretty rough. I mean, of course, I've read this book so many times in my life and seen the movie so many times, but this was still impactful for me, even though I knew what was going to happen. Like, this is sad. Like, I don't remember ever feeling so sad about Buckbeak. I'm sure I have, but like in recent years, I haven't really felt this affected by it. Like, I feel so bad for Hagrid right now, and the trio just feels awful. They feel awful for their friends. So yeah, it's terrible. Buckbeak did nothing wrong. Malfoy was just, oh, he was both, like, Lucius and Draco, like, just awful. And I'm really sad that Dumbledore couldn't do anything to stop it. Like, Fudge had his mind so made up. So yeah, really sad end to this chapter. But, you know, that was a big event that happened. Buckbeak's death, and also the prediction that Professor Trelawney made. So yeah, their exams are over, but they still have some stuff coming up that is more harrowing than their exams. And some of my favorite moments in the series are coming up in these last two chapters. So I'm so excited to get into them. But just want to remind you guys, you can email me at theheirsofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Twitter is @SlytherinPod. Facebook page is The Heirs of Slytherin Podcast. And you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. And we got some really fun, like, I say fun, but just intense chapters coming up. So I'm so excited. Seriously, some of my favorite parts of the series. So make sure you read chapter 17 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban for next episode. And it's called Cat, Rat, and Dog. So again, next episode, make sure you read chapter 17 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Cat, Rat, and Dog. And let me know what you thought of this episode, what you thought of this chapter. I would love to hear your thoughts and opinions and everything. But again, next week's episode is going to be chapter 17 of Prisoner of Azkaban. Thank you for listening to The Heirs of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Mikaela, your host.